Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here with Celeste Headlee. And when we talk about Afghanistan, we often refer to it as Obama's war, since he's focused so much of his sort of foreign policy in Afghanistan. But you really have to have some sympathy for the Afghans who are going to go to the polls next week.
It's got to be a little scary with all the guys with guns hanging out around the polling station.
Well, there are security considerations. There are sort of tribal issues that complicate the whole management of democracy. And, you know, yesterday, to try to deal with some of those security concerns, we were reporting on hundreds of U.S. Marines and Afghan soldiers battling Taliban fighters in a strategic southern town in a whole new operation. I mean, two things we can say about Afghanistan, right? The traditional rules of politics don't apply, and that Hamid Karzai, the current president, is the front runner in the elections.
Right.
Well, here to help us understand what's transpiring in Afghanistan leading up to the elections, we're joined by Ambassador Saeed Tayyeb Jawad. He's the Afghan ambassador to the United States. He joins us from Washington. Good morning, Ambassador.
Good morning, sir.
I mean, it is correct to say that the president, Hamid Karzai, is the front runner, yes?
Yes, the indications are that he will acquire 45% of the votes if he held the elections today in Afghanistan.
Now, that would mean a runoff, or would that mean he would win outright?
That will mean a runoff, because the Afghan constitution requires absolute majority, meaning 50% of the vote or more.
Now, isn't that a sense of failure on the part of Karzai to get an absolute majority during all that's happened in his previous administration?
No, I think this is a clear sign of success. If you could imagine, in a post-conflict country, where we are conducting an active war against the terrorists and Taliban and other elements, where there are a lot of the expectations of the Afghan people could have not been met because of a shortage of resources and manpower. If the president is able to acquire more than 45% of the vote, this is a clear indication. And keep in mind that there are 40 other people who are actually dividing the remaining votes among themselves.
Well, react to a headline, if you might. Our part in the New York Times reported in a recent headline that the Afghan leader courts the so-called warlord vote. And from your president's running mate straight through to reported deals between other warlords around the country, is this a way of projecting credibility, especially since the Obama administration has suggested that maybe Karzai should distance himself from the warlords?
We should look at the history of past 7 years of Afghanistan. The warlords, the undesirable element in the Afghan society and government, were courted by not only by the Afghan government, by our friends internationally. So if there is a plan to sideline the undesirable element, the warlords and others, that burden should be shared by the Afghan government and our friends equally. Most of these warlords provided their services to our international friends when they came in to assist Afghanistan and fight against the Taliban. A lot of them are still working with the international community. So if we pick only one undesirable element because he is at the camp of the president and request the president to distance himself from that individual, it's unfair. We have to have a partnership, a clear understanding, in a systematic approach on sidelining all of them.
Ambassador, this is Celeste Headlee. There are questions, though, about Karzai's connection to some sketchy election practices. I read an article today where there's one tribal elder saying that he's being paid to purchase voter registration cards, and he claims that it's Karzai's own brother that's leading the organization to buy votes. And there's a lot of concerns about the democratic process in this election as it comes forward.
The concerns, if they're legitimate, we all should work, actually, to make sure that they are not implemented. We should empower the Afghan Election Commission further. We should work with them more closely to make sure that there will be no irregularity. But if they initial polls, and there are a number of them, indicates that President Karzai has a wide margin over any other candidates, there is no reason for him to take any measure to undermine the credibility of the voting process in Afghanistan. So if he is winning, while there will be a need for him to rig the vote, as you have seen it on the poll, he has at least a 20% margin over the next running mate in Afghanistan.
Although
I think, but all of us should work hard to make sure that this election is transparent, and if there are concerns, I think they should be addressed through the election commissions, through our friends at the international community. There will be 600 monitors in Afghanistan, and even if some person is able to buy a few a voting card, but only one person will be able to vote once. More than that.
Ambassador, I don't know whether to admire or dispute your logic that if Karzai wins, it's proof that he didn't need to buy the election. The fact that you're winning in the polling isn't necessarily an argument that you aren't buying votes.
The point is that there could be all kind of speculations statements by individuals, but there is a process in Afghanistan. There is an election commission. There's a toll-free number that people can call and register the complaints. But at the same time, it's not very difficult for those who were the opponents of President Karzai to come up with these kind of statements. The point being is there are processes in place, both by the Afghan Election Commission, by UNAMA, by our friends, to address these issues. And I think, as I said, if there are the polls indicate a wide margin for the president, he will have the vested interest to make sure that this process is very transparent.
Ambassador Saeed Tayyab Jawad, ambassador to the United States. So before we go, do you support increased U.S. troops as a continuation of the surge? We've already seen 21,000 more troops entering Afghanistan.
The current composition of the security forces in Afghanistan, combined U.S. and Afghan security forces, is not adequate to overcome the current security challenges. The long-term sustainable solution is to build the capacity of the Afghan police force and the army. That will take time. In order to overcome the short-term obstacles, we do need additional U.S. troops.
How important a domestic issue is controlling the heroin trade and the opium crop in Afghanistan?
It's the most important issue for the Afghan people, the Afghan government, the effect of narcotics, not only decay the political system in Afghanistan, it affects the health and well-being of many Afghans.
But what is the plan to do that? New York Times has charged, and there's a widespread sense of cooperation among warlords within Afghanistan and the president, and you have even said on other occasions that it's not just the Afghan government that cooperates with the warlords. There are others, including the U.S. government, I presume. How can the drug trade be curtailed if it maintains a sense of cooperation with warlords in Afghanistan?
Well, the drug trade is directly connected to Taliban and terrorism. If you look in today's Afghanistan, six provinces in Afghanistan produces 90% of opium. And these are the six provinces in the south where most of the fighting is taking place. These are the provinces where the government of Afghanistan is not in full control, especially Helmand province, which heavy fighting are taking place right now, led by the U.S. Army or Navy. We have more than 7,000 British troops helping us out in our crucial fight in Helmand, produces 60% of opium. So if we are able to establish the rule of law and the control of the government in the provinces, then the problem and the issue of the narcotics will be resolved. We don't have the problem of narcotics in the northern Afghanistan and central Afghanistan, where the Afghan government is in control. In the past, too much emphasis were made on eradication of poppy field. What we are working right now, and the U.S. is also putting a lot of emphasis, is to emphasize interdiction and also providing alternative livelihood to the farmers.
The United States officials have said that about $80 million a year goes from the drug trade to fund terrorist and insurgent groups. And they've also said, though, that the fight against the terrorist organizations is totally separate from the fight against the drug trade. And I'm wondering, first of all, what do you think about that number, $80 million a year? Is that accurate? And two, are we talking about two separate fights?
The $80 million is a conservative estimate. It could be more than that. We think that one-third of the budget of the terrorists and the Taliban are financed by proceeds from narcotics in Afghanistan. I think that we should not make a distinction between our fight against terrorists and narco-traffic. Narco-traffickers and narcotics in Afghanistan. The reason that we fell behind in our fight against narcotics in the past 7 years was that fighting against narcotics was not part of the mandate of fighting terrorism in Afghanistan. If the proceeds of narcotics feed into terrorism, then we should fight narcotics as hard as we are fighting terrorism in Afghanistan.
Ambassador Jawad, what are the alternatives from the perspective of people who actually make the money off of the opium trade? What are the alternatives? I mean, you mentioned interdiction. You say eradication hasn't worked, but they're going to have to grow something.
Absolutely right. I think eradication is not effective because we have to prevent cultivation. Once the poppy is cultivated, it's too late. If you eradicate, you push the farmers into the hand of the terrorists and the Taliban. If you don't, the money will feed the terrorists and the Taliban. And in order to prevent cultivation, we have to give an alternative to the farmers. That alternative could be a new form of crop, but in most cases, it's to add value to the existing crop. For instance, in Kandahar, if a farmer is growing pomegranate or grapes, what needs to be done is more investment in processing that grape or pomegranate into juice or jam or packaging it properly so we can export it to the larger market in the Gulf countries or Europe or somewhere that the farmer will get more value out of this crop. It's basically adding value to the existing crop by investing more in processing facilities.
But who's going to invest in Afghanistan when it's difficult for the Karzai government to guarantee that those investments won't be siphoned off into the kinds of corrupt practices that have plagued the government so far?
That most of the investment are done by the private sector. The private sector has nothing to do with the government. Most of the investment are done right now also by the NGOs and the contractors of the international community. That is neither part of the government nor the government of Afghanistan is truly involved in the private. Our constitution required actually a market economy, so the government is trying hard to stay away from intervention in the market. These investment needs to be done primarily by the private sector, but somehow supported in the form of the providing better loan and guarantees by our friends.
But for whatever reason, the investment isn't happening. You say the government isn't involved. Okay, it's a private sector initiative. Why isn't it happening then? There must be a reason. Either it's security or corruption.
No, it is security. In most cases, of course, it's security. If you have an opportunity to build a factory, say, in a neighboring country where electricity is readily available, the roads are in better shape, and so why you would invest in a difficult place such as Kandahar or Helmand? And that's why there is a need, actually, to support this kind of investment by providing easy credit, for instance, to the private sector, or improving the infrastructure, such as roads or airports and others, so that these products could get out from the farm into the more lucrative market much faster.
Again, which leads back to the issue of security. It's a challenging chicken and egg argument to improve the situation in those provinces. Ambassador Saeed Tayyeb Jawad, Afghan ambassador to the United States, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.